Hi there, my name is Oscar Westlund and I'm a professor and research leader for the OsloMet Digital Journalism Research Group. And this is just a brief introduction to a longer focus seminar presentation that we have pre-recorded here. Saba Bevabi was arriving to OsloMet in mid-March. We managed to have some informal meetings. We had a full day research seminar discussing different papers. We went out for dinner and she was preparing her focus seminar presentation when OsloMet and a series of other universities in Norway right after decided to close down all activities on campus amid the coronavirus, and Saba had to reorganize her plans and return to Sydney much sooner than she had planned for, unfortunately. I was happy we met for a few days and to learn about the exciting and then again that they are developing at UTS in Sydney. With this, we've tried to find an arrangement for her talk to be able to be shared for our wider community. And so I will leave to Saba's presentation here, and she will explore this topic of data journalism and investigative reporting in the Arab world. I'm very pleased that she has recorded this talk for us, and I really hope that Saba will be able to meet with us again at OsloMet in a future state of the world. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Saba Bibawi, and this is a lecture as part of my digital journalism fellowship at OsloMet, and I'm recording it for you. It was meant to be given face-to-face, but because of COVID-19, I had to cut my trip short and record this instead. So ideally, I would have liked to have this conversation with you face-to-face, but hopefully in the future, I will. My area of research is focused at the moment on investigative reporting in the Arab world. It's a part of an Australian Research Council grant, which is a three-year fellowship, and I'm in my final year. And I've been looking at a lot of things. This research has stemmed from my interest in the evolvement of investigative journalism in the Arab region, specifically after the Arab Spring. So there is not much to talk about in terms of data journalism specifically, because it is a new area. But what I would like to do in this lecture is give you a background about Arab journalism in general, the way I've learned it through my research, but also investigative journalism specifically, because what is happening at the moment, and even during COVID-19, is there's a lot of tools that Arab journalists are learning to use to uncover truths and try and do something that traditional journalism in the Arab region has not been able to do. My research is mainly focused on identifying what it is within Arab journalism and investigative journalism specifically that cannot be learned from a Western model. So looking into developing an Arab model of Arab investigative journalism. And that mainly stemmed from my observations during research about when I would watch Arab investigative journalists learning from American or European amazing investigative journalism coaches and trainers. However, it didn't quite resonate with them. And the other issue is that they would do the training and then go back to their newsrooms and then they couldn't apply this form of Western way of doing investigative journalism. And this is what sparked this interest. The other thing that I noticed is that each Arab country is different. And to talk about the Arab world, although I use it quite often, I do need to make a disclaimer that I am aware that every Arab country is different. And we saw that play out during the Arab Spring protests, in that some areas of the Arab world that, you know, it reached, it was successful in getting rid of a dictator, but in other areas, of the Arab world, there was changes to laws and constitutions. So there's different ways of things playing out because every Arab country is different. And the journalism is in turn impacted historically, ideologically, politically, economically in each of these Arab countries. So I do need to make sure that I come across as being aware that different Arab countries operate differently in terms of their journalism. The historic involvement of investigative journalism in the Arab world has not been systematic. So we've seen like sporadic people and journalists conducting investigative journalism. So it's not new to the region, but it became quite institutionalized with the emergence of the Reporters for Arab Investigative Journalism, Arij, with whom I did my first initial part of this research. And what they do is they collectively bring in Arab journalists, and they're funded from the European NGOs and governments. And they kind of systematically implemented different practices of investigative journalism and training in the Arab world. And then each Arab country now has its own organization. So it's really interesting. My personal also interest in this area stems from my own practice of being a journalist in the Arab world, specifically in Jordan. And I noticed that it was very much based on emotive language. So I'd like to talk to you about some observations that have stemmed from my research. First of all, to talk about data journalism, or to talk about investigative journalism using data journalism, we need to remember that facts-based journalism is not part of the practice of journalism in the Arab region. In fact, most of the practice is based on emotional pre-selected opinions. And that is traditionally the way that Arab journalism has developed as a form of persuasion. William Roop has described Arab press as historically been influenced, and I quote, by Arab literature, including poetry, tales, and stories that predated mass media by more than a millennium and developed a very rich tradition by the time the first newspapers appeared. Looking at Patai's definition of what an Arab is, we see that the only thing that holds true is the Arabic language, and that's because it's an emotive language, it's a beautiful language, and it's a very rich language. And that has filtered through into Arab journalism, which is quite interesting. So the Arabic language is rich with emotive expressions, as Rafael Patai argues. And he outlines a few characteristics of Arab journalism, and they include exaggeration, overemphasis, overassertion, and repetition. And if you do an analysis of traditional journalism and news in Arab newspapers, you will find that this is very much reflected in practices of Arab journalism. And, you know, it's complex, as ready-made phraseology and frequent proverbs and sayings. And the reason behind that is based on emotive journalism that is meant to play a steering role, as you note here on the slide on the fourth point. So it was really interesting that the executive director for Arab Reporters for Investigative Journalism, who is now moved on from that role, but Rana Sabah, she notes that perfection is not part of the culture. So this kind of also addresses the issue of basing journalism on a fact-based practice. Personally, while I was doing an observational analysis of training for Arab Reporters for Investigative Journalism at Arij in 2013, I noted that there was a lack of accuracy in the investigative process by training journalists. And there was a constant attempt by coaches to remind the journalist of the difference between fact and opinion. And when brainstorming and workshopping story ideas, the Arab journalists who were training would introduce unsubstantiated opinion and emotion as part of the building block of their investigation. And this is mainly related to the traditional Arab culture of journalism that, as I have just said, has been historically entrenched in mobilizing the masses and promoting the official message. So this was particularly evident during the training sessions that I observed, when the journalists were given an opportunity to report on stories of their choice, which, by the way, they don't usually get a chance to do in Arab newsrooms. They reflected a strong sense of activism. They felt that they played a role on behalf of the people. And although activism can certainly be a driver behind an investigative story, there was a need during the training session to train journalists to rework their mind frames towards the spirit of truth telling, not the spirit of activism based on political or social opinion and emotion. So emotion and fact were interchangeably used by Arab journalists, where they found it difficult to differentiate one from the other. And this is a cultural aspect. So coaches had to constantly find themselves needing to remind journalists the difference between the two. And they had to be told that you can't base it on claims. You need to base an investigative journalism on factual evidence. And this is going to relate back to some of the work that's being done in relation to data journalism later in this talk. Some training journalists are aware of the reliance on opinion rather than fact in the investigative process. And they've explained that that's just due to the lack of factual evidence, which gets me to the final point, which is accessing information. There have been a lot of freedom of information laws, FOI laws, developed in the Arab region with the assistance of international NGOs and lawyers. Particularly, it's interesting to note that Yemen had one of the best FOI laws in the world prior to the civil war. And that clearly hasn't worked because there has been a kind of fine line between state security and access to information. So every time a journalist would want to put in an FOI request at a government organization, the response would be a rejection based on the fact that this is confidential state security information that we cannot release. There was even a running joke between journalists that one researcher asked to put an FOI laws on the number of cattle, and it was rejected based on security information. So the number of sheep in Jordan was clearly related to state security. So it became a situation that was a bit hard for journalists to depend on FOI laws. So they end up just relying on the traditional methods of going to their cousin in the ministry, paying 5 dinars and getting the information they want. Rana Sabah, who's the executive director of Arij, points out that she still asks the journalists to put in FOI laws, even though across the Arab world, even though they might be rejected, because there is a need to document this rejection. There's a historical need to show evidence and proof that it is not working. If journalists stop putting FOI laws because they know they don't work, in turn, there will always be a point made by those in power that you never use them. But if you use them and you put in an FOI law and it's rejected, then you have proof that it is not working, especially by documenting the reasons. It was interesting to see. I'll talk about the challenges, but I'm actually talking about them interchangeably on this slide. But the Panama Papers allowed Arab journalists to use data to investigate and uncover stories relating to their part of the world. And this was notably a very successful exercise and an example that when data is available, investigations are possible. So access to data is a challenge for investigative reporters in the Arab region. And then in turn, uncovering the truth, which is what investigative journalism is supposed to do, is not always possible. The other issue is that information is not recorded and therefore archival material is scarce. And so that is a problem in its own right. And I will refer again to that in terms of what different data journalism initiatives are doing at the moment in terms of accumulating that archival material. The challenges that face investigative journalism, as I said already, are the traditional practices. Journalism education is one of the other main problems that we face. There's two ways for journalists to learn investigative journalism. The first one is universities. So there have been a few courses and even MA degrees is the one in Tunisia, which is focused on investigative journalism. However, the problem remains that a lot of the professors who teach investigative journalism have not practiced investigative journalism themselves. So in a roundtable for professors at Arija's annual forum, the professors come together and they talk about the challenges in teaching investigative journalism. And they range from in Yemen during the civil war, not having access to electricity and the closure of campuses, to that of the problem that in Lebanon, even when students go out to do an investigation on campus, they're faced with the campus security telling them you can't do this and you can't film that and you can't interview this person. So there are always kind of challenges and blocks. The other form of journalism education in terms of investigative journalism that have been happening is that of, and that's been through Arija, all these investigative journalism organizations like Siraj and Niraj in Syria and Iraq and Libya also, is that they come in with the Western model of investigative journalism. And the coaches themselves are aware of that. They know that, well, how else will we teach investigative journalism when there is no history of investigative journalism in the Arab world? We have to do it from our own perspective, from an American, Anglo, or European perspective. The problem is that most of the step-by-step processes of doing an investigative report cannot be implemented in the Arab world. And we find that very evident when the investigative journalists, the Arab journalists, go back to their newsrooms. They actually cannot conduct these stories because they are faced with editors who, as my first point on this slide indicates, are adhering to traditional practices of journalism. It's also a time-consuming and expensive form of journalism, so it's very difficult to implement in their newsrooms in a very fast-paced news environment with political happenings all the time. It's very difficult. So journalism education has huge limitations when it comes to training investigative journalists. However, they are learning and they are trying. And I will again talk about that in relation to data journalism at the end of the lecture. I'll jump to the fourth point of the state control, but I do need to point out that I went into this research around 5-10 years ago, particularly after the Arab Spring, questioning whether state control is limiting the development of investigative journalism or not. Of course, it is. But that wasn't the main obstacle. It was interesting that the main obstacle was society itself, which is the third point, social pressures. Very interestingly, and I have a few slides to talk about this later on, I think. Here it is, societal challenges, is that the journalists find that they cannot be doing their work if society doesn't back them up. In places where the Arab Spring didn't pan out, society is telling them, telling the journalists, do not rock the boat. We're seeing refugees in Syria. We see what's happening there. We don't care about investigative journalism. We don't care about uncovering the truth. So it's almost like they're on their own. Tim Sebastian spoke to the journalists in one of the forums for Arij again, and this quote where he says, the chances are that society isn't going to give you any prizes for digging the truth, even if you succeeded in getting it published, which again is a huge impediment. That's what you're up against, not just the governments that would seek to control your voice, but sections of the public that don't even want you to. So this is a major obstacle. One of the really good examples of this is a story, if you recall, an investigative story conducted by Hanan Khadoukji, and she did it with BBC Arabic at the time, on orphanages in Jordan and the mistreatment of orphans there. And there were these, it became an international story, and there were these bleak images of naked young kids being chained to steel beds and being hit by women and caretakers, and some of them were covered. This caused a huge issue for Hanan when she published the story. It was interesting that, in fact, the government, the King of Jordan, put together a task force investigating orphanages. They found that it was not just that orphanage in Jordan, but others. They closed them down. They held those accountable, and they set up new policies and frameworks and rules for orphanages and how they operate. So it really helped in every sense. It's an example of a successful story that, of course, because it went international, the state had to respond. However, Hanan, as the journalist, was faced with this backlash from the Jordanian society, telling her, how dare you make us look bad, showing veiled women hitting kids and giving a bad name to Muslims. They already have a reputation for violence. This is not helping our cause. And she had to actually turn back and say, I myself am veiled, she said. So another example of how societies doesn't always support rocking the boat, even if it's for the better. There are some cultural norms that make it very difficult for them to proceed. On that topic, I'll just end with this. And I think a very important quote that's resonated with me, again, Tim Sebastian talking on the 5th of December 2014, telling the journalists, I remember several years ago talking about human rights with a Cairo lawyer who began laughing at me. Quote, people aren't even talking about this stuff, end quote, he said. They don't want it, at least they want other things much more. They want a job, money, medicine for the sick, and a quiet life. And if a dictator can offer them that, then to hell with your free speech and your free press. Which do you think they're going to sacrifice first? So Tim is telling the investigative journalists in the room, it is a lonely job you have. And I think this quote really resonated with me because I could see every Arab citizen nodding their head saying, yeah, that's what we want. We do not want, we want the basics. And if you know, the free press and free information and speech is going to harm that, then it's really going to have to take a pause. James Metmer and Glaser point out that emotion and persuasion also play a role in American investigative journalism. And so it's really important to remember that it's not a negative thing that I'm pointing out, that there is emotion in Arab journalism. But as I said, it needs to be a driver as opposed to something that it relates to the process itself. I've spoken about these challenges, the traditional practices, journalism education, social press, state control, freedom of information, and instability of the region. And this was first done through a mapping of investigative journalism in a book that I published with Palgrave, named Investigative Journalism in the Arab World, Issues and Challenges. And what I found after that is that it is really hard, as I said, to kind of say there is one way of doing things in the Arab world. However, the issues and the challenges, they were common across the Arab region, that every Arab country, as I said, is doing it differently. And that's what my research is on at the moment. And I'm still in the process of understanding that, talking to different journalists from Arab regions. The instability of the region is not one that I need to talk more about, but I will kind of relate that to one quote that Rana Sabah, from the ex-executive director of Arish, said. And she expressed the region as moving sands. And it's really interesting, not because it's just a desert, but there's fine particles of sand, and how a sandstorm comes in immediately. That's how the region is. And so for journalists to navigate that, it's quite hard. I'll move on now to, after giving you kind of a background of investigative journalism and just giving you an idea of the issues and challenges that go beyond just state control, let's look at what's happening in terms of digital policies in the Arab world, and understand what is being done in terms of digital policy, digital practice, and data journalism. There are a few papers and policies out there. One is the white paper by the World Economic Forum in 2018, entitled The Digital Arab World, Understanding and Embracing Regional Changes in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And to sum it all up, it kind of advocates for a top-down, saying that the top-down kind of approach does not work. It needs to be done at a grassroots level, adopting digital practices, that we need to stay true to the purpose of why we are doing this as Arabs, but also have patience and foresight, which is not something that happens overnight. And there is that need for that leapfrog effect, that kind of for Arab digital practices, wherever they might be, to kind of jump onto catching up with the rest of the world. The Internet Society in 2017 also have a document enabling digital opportunities in the Middle East. And their recommendation, as one of many, is to open dialogue and actually have the Arab countries talking to each other, and talk about the challenges and how to implement them, but also working with relevant stakeholders as opposed to every Arab region kind of working in a bubble towards that. McKinsey put out a paper for 2016 entitled Digital Middle East, Transforming the Region into a Leading Digital Economy. This is an interesting one because it really is catered towards the Gulf countries. I think it stemmed from the UAE. But what you see is that it kind of identifies digital policies within four areas, which is the government, business, funding, and talent, which is skills and upskilling to digital areas. But there was nothing in that report about journalism or media or flow of information or news. And it just shows that these are the areas, there are kind of selected areas where there is a field where digital policies can be applied, but when it comes to other areas such as media and communication, it isn't. So, for example, in the government, there is a move from e-government-focused digital initiatives to full digital economy development, empowering national digital agencies. Again, in terms of talent, rethinking how to attract and retain digital talent and reconsider applicability of nationalism to digital. So there are many recommendations, but the focus on the right to information and the need for governments to be transparent is not a clear one on those in terms of digital applications. I'd like to talk about some of the data journalism initiatives in what was left in my talk. And mainly, there have been a few organizations and projects that have realized the importance of providing data for Arab journalists and have in turn been setting up platforms for this. And One organization that has been acknowledging the need and the importance for this in the region is the Arab Reporters for Investigative Journalism, Arij, and they set up the Arij MENA's Research and Data Desk project. And what it aims to do is develop a singular coordination online data desk that collects as much diverse data as possible from open sources in Arij target countries. And what they do is they take the work and the data collection that investigative journalists have already done, say that some particular information on a particular part of the Arab world or a company, then instead of another journalist going and doing it all over again, especially if the work was done undercover, then they archive it and put it together so that investigative journalists can actually archive, access the archives to this desk. So data that is collected through this project focuses on company, court, and land records. That also includes data on legal actions, taxes, property, and finance, in addition to things like government contracts, tenders, and statistics. And the aim of that is to develop fact and evidence-based journalism. The Arij Data Desk was set up through a fund from the Ibtikar Media Program that Arij was granted in 2014. And the challenge there has really been to ensure the update, the continuous update of data, especially pertaining to Arab records. So that has been one of the challenges that they have faced. Another initiative that has focused on data journalism in the region is a project called InfoTimes. And this was established in 2012 by Amr al-Iraqi, a data journalist who actually wanted to create a platform for Arab data. And he quotes, instead of relying exclusively on translated materials. So the website infotimes.org provides data that is available to Arabic and English and French, which covers the main spoken languages in the Arab world. But it also provides reporters tools for data presentation and visualization. And the aim, as it says here, is to provide, to introduce Arab journalists to the concept of data visualization as a new tool for storytelling. But as a result of the interest from Arab journalists in this project, Al-Iraqi, along with a team of nine other people, went on to establish another initiative, which is called Arab Data Journalist Network, and it's aimed to support data journalists in the Arab region and also help Arab journalists enhance their skills through new tools that could be used in telling data-driven stories, but as he states here, in a professional way. And what he understands that data is really difficult to collect, especially when you keep in mind what I've said about there is no archival material, FOI requests are always rejected. But this is what he said in an interview. He says that collecting news, for example, if you wanted to do collect data on sexual harassment, which he would look at the details of the time, the place, and when and where the incident took place, in addition to some information about the type of harassment and the age of the girl that was being harassed. And this might lead to creating a database about sexual harassment, say, in Egypt. So they look through all the newspapers, they collect the different cases. Now, they understand that this is not going to be inclusive because it was published in the news and there are limitations and there's gatekeeping. But what they believe in is that if they use this method addressing different issues such as terrorism, murder, human rights violations, the absence of official data must not hold them back, and that they should put this path forward in producing more stories. So they are in a delicate position. Now, these initiatives that I've spoken about are necessary and really have become instrumental for the development of Arab-based data journalism cultures, especially in light of the difficulty of obtaining sources and information. But although limitations to access data is continuously a challenge, there is a rise in the acknowledgement of importance of data journalism and the and importance of training. So a lot of these initiatives online, if you go to their websites, you'll also see that there's these short courses and tools about how to do data visualization, how to collect data and access records and deal with statistics. So InfoTimes specifically offers training in data journalism fundamentals. They do advanced steps in data journalism, specialized data scraping tools for journalists, and data cleaning and analysis with Excel. So their aim is to develop these kind of skills for journalism in the region. And from my own research, I found that Arab journalists have a problem in moving around. So Syrian journalists, Iraqi journalists, Libyan journalists. So if they have access to the internet and they can access these sources and self-teach themselves, then that is probably a really good way where how that they can learn how to do stories and implement uncovering the issues that they want to report on and publish. Arij also provides training to Arab journalists, reporters on the use of things like open source data, the analysis of business data, including bank statements and statistics. And they focus at the same time on how to train Arab reporters to reach out to audience and do crowdsourcing. And that data would in turn prompt them to, in a way, demand reform, as they say. And this is an important shift from the emotive-based investigative journalism that I spoke about, even emotive-based journalism full stop, and that has traditionally scarred Arab reporting. And slowly turning through these initiatives, you can see that it's slowly turning it to factual evidence. So in essence, it's not only Arab journalists that need to make the shift. But Arab audiences too will need to move from being shaped through emotions to understanding issues through data. And thanks to social media and the openness of borders to each other, access to information wherever it is, I think that is happening. And just to end, I guess we always need to think of the way forward. There is a continuous attempt to train, remind journalists that they can't predict findings of the investigation, that they should rely on facts and data as evidence. So training investigative journalism in the region is not only focused on eradicating previous journalistic habits, but also there are issues and challenges to data-based journalism that will require time to change entrenched traditions of Arab reporting in general. And that is, you can see that through a new generation of journalists, but also the environment is a different one to that when I was working in the Arab region as a journalist in the 90s, it's hugely different. And the process of developing data-driven journalism in the region is twofold. And so the first, as I state here on this slide, is abolishing traditional journalistic practices that are embedded in the Arab culture of journalism. And that's by teaching data journalism processes and skills and developing a revived culture of journalism based on evidence. And secondly, developing databases and archival information with the aim of addressing the lack of access to data so that Arab reporters do not need to rely on the approval of governments and companies to obtain FOI requests and in turn provide them with data and tools and networks. So data journalism in the Arab world is still in its early stages and initiatives to developing a culture of evidence reporting still really new. But there are attempts which we need to acknowledge and that indicate that Arab journalism is going through a transitional phase. And despite the restrictions and political upheaval Arab journalists continue to face on a day-to-day basis, data journalism might just become one of the most important tools that they have in addressing corruption and conflict. So watch the space, I guess. Thanks for having me. If you have any questions, just email me. It would have been lovely to have a proper Q&A, but as I said, we can take that online. And thanks for your time.